Hi, this is Gurusi Singh, and you're listening to my Thick Accent podcast. So there is a misconception that often surrounds immigrants and their journey. There is a belief that immigrants are behind in their journey and that they are playing catch up to the rest of the society. In fact, they're exactly where they are meant to be. Every person's journey is unique, and for immigrants, their journey may include overcoming obstacles and challenges that others may not have to face. But these challenges do not define them or their journey. Instead, they serve as an opportunity for growth and resilience. Also, immigrants do bring a wealth of diverse experiences, skills, and perspectives to their communities and workplaces. They contribute a lot to the cultural fabric of society. And to discuss more on the same, I have my guest today, who moved to Canada in 2016 from Israel as an international student to pursue human resources management from Thompson's River University in Kamloops, British Columbia. He was a club president at the Thompson River University Toastmasters Club and the executive member of the Human Resources Management Club, and has also worked as a student systems support analyst and is now an executive for Ontario PC Party. Let's learn more from him why he moved to Toronto and chose to avoid the Vancouver rains and has built his careers in various roles and domains. Please welcome Idan Jacobs.
Thank you, Gurusis. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me. And I liked your intro. Really, very relatable. Yeah.
So welcome to the podcast once again. And I'm really glad to have you on the podcast. Like I said, I'm going to cover all these topics, just how we always think that immigrants are behind in their journeys, but they're exactly where they're meant to be. Before we unfold more of your journey and talk more about the same, let me take you back to the time you spent in Israel. Tell us a little bit about your formative years and how was it like just growing up there?
So I grew up in a place called Ra'anana, which is a town of less than 80,000 people. And that's where I spent most of my elementary school, junior high school. And it had a lot of communities of people that came from other places around the world. And paradoxically, I kind of felt like an outsider. Because really? In a way, the people who were local are, to an extent, a minority. When you have people from other countries that are hanging out with their communities. And also the fact that I moved there, I wasn't born there. I moved there from a different place, also added to that. And my experience is that when you grow up with an education system, which is from a certain grade up to the end of high school, and you have the same people, you get treated a certain way, the same way. And you don't really get to explore many sides of yourself, which is what made me want to try to travel and move to other cities, other countries, which is one of the reasons that brought me here.
And can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, how the education system is there in Israel? Like for example, you know, how until the 10th we have like certain subjects in India everybody has to study, and then after 10th you are asked to choose like either physics, chemistry, maths, or engineering, or it could be, you know, get into humanities, or it could be the commerce. So how is it like in Israel?
So in Israel, actually, broadly, there are roughly multiple education systems. You have the Arab sector, which has Christian and Muslim schools. You have the ultra-Orthodox, that they're focused more on holy studies. You have the Orthodox, that they combine holy studies with regular topics. And then you have the general education, which is mostly for the, I guess, secular people, which is what I which is where I went to. And you get to choose when you go to, for me it was high school, but I'm pretty sure for people now it's for from a younger age, what you want, would you like to major in? And you could even do more than one. English is a second language from an early age, so that's not even a choice, it's part of it. And I was given a choice between Arabic and French. And okay. I took Arabic because I thought it was important to know the region that we were in, the Middle mm-hmm. East. Had I known I was going to come to Canada, I would have taken French. but I'm pretty sure today they give you other options like Spanish or Mandarin. Like, you, there's so many options nowadays, you know, with like democratic education and more scientific or technological based schools. So you have plenty of options. I think it's very diverse and developed, the education system there. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I remember you were also telling me that, you know, your upbringing was a little different than the other people. And you were more exposed to the, you know, the Western music or maybe the Western culture. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I was, as I was growing up, I was kind of an introvert. Mm-hmm. You know, I was staying at home a lot with my VCR, that's a video cassette recorder for those who don't know, which is what was before we had streaming services. Yeah. And I used to record all kinds of series or movies and music videos. And growing up on that North American and British cultures, I've really connected to it, really adopted it personally. Mm-hmm. I think more than other people that for them it might just be an option. And for me, I would define myself as an Anglophile.
So is this something that you miss about Israel?
The food. The food, I think, which is Middle Eastern food, the way they make the hummus, the way they make the meat. Sorry to our vegetarian listeners, but... The way they do it, I don't know if it's the spices or the way they grow it or the way they cook it. It's just, it has a flavor that I have not encountered yet in other places, like Europe or in Canada. So I really miss the food and also my dog. Mm. Because when you talk to your family, you know, they respond, but if you try to talk to your pet through a video cam, they may look for you, but you won't get the same reaction.
Okay. And yeah, you said it right that I think even for me, the food is something I miss the most, and it's the flavor. I mean, you do get all those Indian spices and everything here, but still the restaurants, that whatever they sell, it's not as authentic as, you know, your own country. So I know what you're saying about that. Okay. So is there any misconception you think people have about Israel or just the residents of Israel?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And what I found is that a lot of people, either they glorify or vilify Israel. Hmm. They either have this idea that Israel is as it was in biblical times, you know, with all kinds of places that were built at that time, all kinds of structures, which there are some artifacts, but mm-hmm. it's not like that. Or they see it as what they've encountered on the news, what they've run into, you know, the notion of a place that's at war all the time and you're at risk and it's unsafe. Mm-hmm. And what I like to tell people is that Israel is neither as glamorous nor as horrible as you might think. Mm. It's just a place with pros and cons, with things that are great and issues like any other place. And I personally have criticism towards certain things there. Mm-hmm. I personally praise certain things about it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important to put things into perspective. Mm-hmm. And similar to a lot of places, people get their the image from the media, either it's the mainstream or the social media, and they only see one side of it. So it's great to talk to a person who's from there, or even better to go and travel there and visit yourself.
Hmm. Okay. And you were also telling me that musicians don't usually come there as often, you know. Tell me about that. Why would you say that?
Well, hopefully that's changing. But from my experience, it's a combination of things. Mm-hmm. One issue is the fact that it's a relatively small country. So there isn't that much of an audience. And it's geographically not located in a place that's convenient for a tour. It's like you're going to Europe or you're going to South America. It's somewhere in the Middle East. And I don't know how many other Middle Eastern countries would particularly have fans of certain Western music. Mm-hmm. So that's about the demand.
Okay.
The other issue is security, of course, which sometimes there could be situations where there is there's tension in that region.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's usually in certain areas, like around the borders, but sometimes people who see it from the outside can't really distinguish. They just think the whole place is, you know, under attack.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you pass those hurdles. Let's say you do have an audience, and let's say it's a good period for security. There would still be those who would decide to boycott Israel politically. There's the BDS movement. I don't know if you heard about it, boycott, divestment, and sanctions.
Okay.
That, in a way, what they do is punish the people in Israel by not letting them go and attend a concert of a band that they like, or an artist, which I find kind of ridiculous, because even if you do support a political cause, I don't think that it should be mixed with art. I think that music should bring the people together.
Absolutely.
And if somebody has, you know, a political message, then instead of saying, oh, we're not going to play there, why don't you go and play in other places as well? You know, in the Palestinian territories, for example. I think that create more opportunities and not less. That's my perspective on it. And hopefully with time and with the latest peace agreements in the region, that Israel is being more accepted into the region, more artists will come. Like, for example, now you could have a direct flight from the Emirates to Israel, from Dubai, which you couldn't do several years ago. So if an artist were to play there, because there are a lot of Westerners there, they could continue to Israel now with a direct flight, which is something that wasn't there before. So those are, I guess, signs of hope. And so I'm cautiously optimistic.
Hopefully, I think one should be optimistic about that. So then in 2016, you decided to pack your bags and move to British Columbia, Kamloops specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not wrong, before that, you did come to Toronto in 2015 to study at ALAC College, or was it like a remote program?
Yes. Actually, I came to ILAC, which is the International Language Academy of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ESL school, and they have this program. I don't know if they still have it. It's called Service Excellence for Business.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that program is supposed to prepare you to work in hospitality and restaurants and businesses like that. The idea is that you study for 6 months, and then you work for 6 months at a job that's related. The thing is that immigration has to give you a visa for the entire duration of the program, which is a one-year study visa and a one-year work visa. And a person who would go about doing that program, let's say that they were approved, that might not necessarily give them enough points to successfully do immigration to Canada.
Yeah.
Which is why I was rejected from that application. At the time, I didn't know. I thought, oh, maybe it's about I don't have enough money, or why do they think that I am not suitable? But that was the result. And what I did in order to prove that I was that I'm a genuine bona fide student was come to Canada as a tourist. You can do that up to 6 months and take an ESL course at that school.
Mm-hmm.
The course is called University Pathway.
Okay.
And that course prepares you for post-secondary education after that, be it a college or a university. And for that, you'd have to reapply for a study visa for those academic studies. But it creates more of a solid foundation. Okay, this person is serious. They actually went and did that preparation. They're enrolling at a longer program. all those considerations go into account. And then when I reapplied later and I found out about the Thompson Rivers University in Kamloops, it was a smooth process to get the study permit.
I just want to go back to the time again, you know, when you were in Israel and
sure.
You did have like a trajectory of, you know, experiences in terms of like education. You know, you have touched political science as well. Then you have done journalism and video production as well.
So actually for me, it's, I kind of fell into it, but in Israel, when you're 18, mm-hmm. there is mandatory military service. Mm-hmm. And having a medical issue, I was exempted from it.
Okay.
And I found myself in a situation of, okay, what do I do next? I was 19 because I stayed a year in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. So, but usually most people go at 18 and I wasn't in the army. So what do I do? And other than working at McDonald's, my mm-hmm. dad told me, okay, while you're dealing with your health issue, you could go to school. We'll support you if you choose to do... to pursue education. And I happened to live near a branch of the Open University. That's the biggest university in Israel. Mm-hmm. And I found myself quite interested in political science. So that's when I started with my undergrad. Mm-hmm. Later on, when I worked for the Open University of Israel as a studies advisor at the media school, I ended up studying that program that I was promoting, the television studies, journalism, production, and such.
So in 2016, Idan, you landed in Canada. So tell us about your first day. What was going on in your mind?
So I landed in Calgary because the airport in Kamloops mm-hmm. is a one-hour flight from either there or Vancouver. You can't really go directly there. So when I landed, it was around 10 days before Christmas Eve, and it was freezing. That was the first time I've experienced winter in Canada. Because when I came to Toronto as a tourist, that was May to October. So I was there when it was all sunny. I thought, okay, well, it's great to have that right away and get this out of the way, that first experience of winter. And I had come relatively early because the semester starts in January and orientation week is a few days in the beginning of January. And I came before even orientation started. So most of the university offices were closed. I had to kind of walk around and be like a detective and figure out what I need to do and trying to get as many things as I can done before orientation because I wanted to be on the ball and, you know, to kind of get a head start.
Yeah.
So it was, in the beginning, a learning process for sure for everybody that lands in a new place.
Okay. And tell us about the first day at university. How was that like?
First day at university. So the first day, I would say, I probably consider orientation because that's the first activity. Mm-hmm. And I was really impressed by how many people from different cultures, different countries go there. It's something you get used to very fast. Suddenly, oh, it's, you know, like it's nothing. People from different places. And I met some people who became, who I became friends with, such as our mutual acquaintance, Yasser Khan. And I guess after that, we went to classes. I'm not sure if it was same day, but when we went to classes, I found myself quite interested in how they were teaching. I think that I pretty fast got the impression that it's going to be challenging. It's going to demand, but it's not impossible. And I can do this. And maybe even some of the courses I've taken back home at university were even tougher.
Did you have any anxiety in terms of like, what if I don't fit in, or in terms of you had a sort of like a cultural shock within the university?
Not much of a cultural shock because I've already been to Canada before.
Yeah,
I think with fitting in, I wasn't concerned, but I found that sometimes people still hang out with their groups, the people they come with, they come they come from the same country. And I didn't really have that. I wasn't even looking for that. You know, I came with the approach of just, you know, meeting new people from different places. But some people are more open than others to interact with you and become your friend. And you can see pretty quickly, I guess, people who are more cosmopolitan versus people who are kind of more ethnocentric and, you know, closed in their own group.
Yeah, you're right. We do see that in our class. I think the same happened with me. I saw the same in my class, that there were these clusters where Indians were with Indians. Not that I had an Indian in my class, but no, Latinos with Latinos, Chinese with Chinese, Koreans with Koreans. So you do see that clusters. And just like you, I think neither that was something I was looking forward to get into when I moved here. And so during your studies, you did do a lot of part-time jobs as well, right? I did see that you worked at Walmart. You also worked at Sears. So tell us about, like, how was that experience like for you? Like, since you did come with, like, you know, a lot of experiences, you did work maybe a little bit in your country as well, then coming and doing such jobs. And tell us about that experience, or how did you even get these jobs?
So coming here, here meaning to Canada.
Yeah.
right now I'm in Ontario, then it was BC.
Yeah.
I first got the advice from the advisors at the school and most of the people who supported me, to telling me, okay, first few months, try not to work, focus on your studies.
Mm.
And then towards the summer, I started looking for a job. My goal was to start working, I guess, the beginning of May, because like spring starts. And then I ended up only starting work at the end of July. I found that from the moment you make the decision, you start looking for a job and applying, till you get the call back or till you get the interview, takes time, because that's not necessarily up to you. You can only do so much. But once you do that, the ball's in their court. So it was quite frustrating to see, I guess, money coming out without you having to being able to get some income. But I'll tell you another thing. I think that I would rather find something that I'm suitable for, rather than doing something I'm not, just for the sake of having a job. For example, one thing I did after my university back in Israel, I did a teaching civics certificate. Then I found myself in the classroom during the practicum that I didn't really feel like a teacher. So I didn't stick with that. I ended up being a studies advisor at that media school for a while. So I had a similar situation here where I got a job at KFC. And I thought, oh, I've previously worked at McDonald's. How hard can it be? And I realized that there you actually have to cut the chicken and take out the kidney beans and flour it. And I was like, this is not for me. I'm sorry. They didn't really need a person who would be a cashier or do cleaning. So they gave me a shift a week. And that's when I started thinking, okay, I need another job. And that's when I found Sears, which was closing after that. But that was the stepping stone to get to Walmart, because once you have that foot in the door, you have that little experience, you put it in your resume and move to the next thing.
Yeah. And Kamloops is a small city, right? And you don't really have enough part-time opportunities. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think they're pretty limited. I mean, the city is, it's, I think, around 90,000 people. The reason why I went there in the first place was because as an international student, you know, we spend a lot on mostly tuition and living expenses, and Kamloops was at the time less costly. So I went there. But I mean, if you find, I guess, a job that's full-time as an international student, you're limited due to the 20-hour restriction during the semester. So you wouldn't get hired, right? Talking about off-campus. And on-campus, everybody wants to work because there's no limitation. So the competition is very high.
It probably
depends what you're willing to do. I guess if you're okay with shoveling snow or cleaning offices, if you're able to do that, then you might find a job, but not everybody can do everything. So,
Yeah. And so during your studies, you know, you did do a lot of volunteer work. You were part of the Toastmasters Club. You were also part of the HR Management Club. And I remember you were also telling me that how volunteer work really helps you, you know, build that network within the new country and really help the process of, facilitate the process of getting the job as well. So tell us about that experiences as well.
So being in clubs and not just being a member, but also being in the leadership, in the executive team, that really helped in the sense that it adds more accolades to your resume. You know, it adds more things that you can stand out. And once you graduate, it's not just, okay, what did you do? I finished this diploma or degree, and I worked at some retail or fast food, which is what a lot of international students do. You have that added benefit of saying, I was president of this club, or I was VP of marketing, or I was doing, being part of the production of TEDx, or helping with a fashion show, or all kinds of activities that you could put in and say, okay, look, I did this and this and that, and I have experience in many ways. Because when you apply to jobs, as you know, there's that catch 22. You need experience. Employers are looking for experience. And then people who are applying saying, okay, how can I get the experience if I don't have a job? Well, that's where you volunteer. You know, that's where you do something that would have, would give you that experience. The problem with most people is that they see this as working for free. They want the instant gratification. They want the cash in hand. And if they don't see the benefit right away, they stop. They either they come to one meeting or they don't show up. And then they miss out on the benefit. And then once one day when they actually apply to the job, you see that people contact you for a reference. And you really think to yourself, okay, how many times have I been doing something with that person? Have I engaged with them? What can I say about them? Have they helped me organize an event or put something together or contributed in any way? Great, I have some memories of them. But maybe they came once as a guest. I don't know. What can I say about them, right? Because I'm a pretty genuine person. So, so I guess that's the other aspect of it. The one aspect is putting it in your resume. The other aspect is having a reference, a recommendation, which that type of volunteering gives you.
I think definitely, you know, especially when you're in a new country, these volunteer works definitely helps you build a character, build a personality. And also, like, you know, we always talk about job search. Even in previous episodes, I have talked that hard skills can be learned. It's the soft skills. It's the ability to have the understanding of Canadian culture. The Canadian environment is something really helps you get the job. Not your education and not the things that you have on your resume.
Yes, for sure.
So let's just pivot towards your role, which your full-time role at Thompson Abel University as a student system support analyst. Tell us about that role.
So I was the first person in the history of that institution to actually do that role.
Really?
It was a new role that was created by my manager at the time. Her idea was she wanted a person who would be liaising with different departments and see where their issues are and offer suggestions for improvements. Having been through a job previously in Israel as a studies advisor and also working for an open learning school for e-teacher, I've had that experience that they were looking for. And on top of that, all the volunteer experience that I had. So in a way, it kind of felt like this job was made for me.
Well, it definitely was.
The only issue was that my start date was mid-February 2020. So around a month and a half after, we were working from home. And I kind of found this to be challenging because it's not only the fact that it's a a new job for me, it's a role that has not been done before. So there wasn't anybody to mentor me particularly. I was to form that role in conditions that were not the easiest. And on top of that, some months after, I think around a year, my boss then retired. Because of COVID, they let people do early retirement.
Yeah.
So what happened was that my role kind of shifted with the new management, and I didn't feel that I necessarily was able to do all the things that I set out to do when I joined that job. Especially when we went back to the office, I had this expectation of, okay, some of the things that I'm struggling with are because of working from home, are because of the pandemic. But then I saw that, okay, things have changed now, and I'm not sure that I'll be able to leave a mark and improve things the way I set out. And especially with, you know, a university that's a big bureaucratic institution, and there's a lot of politics and pressures and unions. And add to that, on top of that, the fact that I felt that I was living in a small town, I kind of felt out of context there, which pushed me to pack my bags and make this move to Ontario, to Toronto, which is the biggest city in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. Were you also having those conversations, or maybe like a one-to-one, sort of like, you know, understanding what students might need or may not need in university? Was that also part of your role?
Actually, not for the most part, no, because my role was working with the staff that worked with the students.
Okay.
So the role is student systems support analyst. So I had to work with the people who worked with the systems and give them solutions and give them ideas or reports or some kind of data output, something that they asked, or make an input of some configuration change. So sometimes maybe by chance, an email from a student would end up in our inbox, but we're not supposed to, you know, in that kind of role, in that kind of team, we're not really supposed to engage directly with the student. We're supposed to fix the issue and for the staff person that contacts the student.
Okay. And does that role still exist, or are you left, or it's gone?
Actually, it does exist. Another student that I met, who was also involved with some extracurricular activities, contacted me on social media some months ago to ask me about the role. And I gave him some tips, and from what I know, he got it. And I hope he's enjoying it and that he's still there.
So then, Nidan, in the second half of 2022, you decided to move to Toronto. And you were telling me that you chose not to go to Vancouver, considering it's a big city, but still not so big. And tell us about that. Why Toronto?
So first of all, living in the West Coast, to get to visit my country or have people from my country come and visit me from and to Israel was very tricky, you know, especially if you have wildfires there or snowstorms that could really affect the flight. And that's just one flight to leave Kamloops to Vancouver or Calgary. Then you have to get from there to Toronto or Montreal. And when then once you do, it doesn't work with the hours of the direct flight to Tel Aviv. So you have to go through Europe, and that's another connection. So having done that journey a few times, that was one thing. The other thing is that it's also closer to my family, as I said, that they can come and visit me and I can go and visit them. Toronto also has a big Jewish community. I'm not a religious person, but I feel that after being in a small place where there weren't that many people who have a similar background, and especially during the pandemic, it could really help to have that those opportunities, that support network. And speaking of opportunities, there are way more jobs. There is public transit that works way more. Yeah, I know people here complain about it, but I think everything is relative, you know, compared to a different place that you were in. And if we talk again about food, you know, there's so many options for authentic cuisines here. So I definitely enjoy that.
So since you are in Toronto, and you tell us about your role at as executive assistant as well. How did you get that job, by the way?
Yes. So this job, similar in a way to having volunteer experience helped me get that job at the university. In this case, I volunteered for a candidate for the municipal elections. And through that, after the campaign was over, I talked to the guy who was the manager of the campaign, and I asked him if he knows anyone hiring. I showed him my resume, and he said, you know what, let's sit for a coffee. We'll go over it and see if there's anything that could fit. He gave me some tips, and then he said, oh, there's this opportunity for a member of provincial parliament that's hiring, and you might fit with your experience. So I applied to that. I spoke with that member, and today, fast forward months later, she is my boss.
Wow, that's incredible. So tell me, what is something that you absolutely love about this job?
The ability to learn what's going on in the province. I feel that it really connects me to, you know, especially as a person who's a recent immigrant here, to know what the government is planning, to understand what issues people are going through, and then how can you connect those solutions with those problems? What kind of policy is the government offering to people? How can we inform them about all kinds of grants or bills or procedures that would be to their benefit, all kinds of services that would benefit them? So I feel that it's both about, it's for me, being informed and making an impact. That combination is quite valuable for me, I would say.
And are there any policies or programs you think you can share on the podcast that kind of in the process?
That's a good question. there's so many things. I mean, the government of Ontario is, it's a huge, apparatus, or how would you call, you know, this body that has, you know, so many ministries and budgets and all that stuff. I guess I would say that if people are interested, I mean, the starting point would be to go to ontario.ca and start looking around over there, searching maybe for the specific ministry that is related to what they're looking for. And then they could start to get an idea. Also, they could look for their local MPP, member of provincial parliament, and get in touch with their constituency office. That's the office that provides service to the public, either by phone or by email. And then they could get more information from a person if they're not fans of just surfing the web. That's another way of learning about it.
While you were talking, you know, you were explaining this, Adan, I just realized that the networking has really worked in your favor, you know, from getting the role at university and then getting this current role. And again, you know, once again, I'll say to my listeners that they'd say that networking doesn't work for them, and they never get any fruit from all the hard work that they put in. But I would say much to my listeners that Adan is generally like a right example here that networking does help. It's just that you have to do it the right way and with the intention of, you know, connecting with people rather than immediately asking for that job when you connect with them or asking them to, you know, refer you without even knowing, you know, what interest could be or what field you want to get into or what exactly your current status is to some extent. So you have any words on that, Ilan?
Yes, there's a book that I have not read but listened to so many times. Maybe you're familiar with it, Gruesis. It's called The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles. And one of the things that he mentions there is that you don't get rich, or in our case, get ahead by doing certain things. you get rich by doing things in a certain way.
Hmm.
So the idea is that it's about your attitude. It's not about, okay, I did, you know, a million things. If you did few things, but you did them like a millionaire would do. Like if you do,
I love that.
You know, if you think that when you talk to any person on the street, let's say that you run into and treat them with the same level of respect that you were to treat somebody who could get you that job, you might be surprised that maybe that the opportunity is just around the corner. But people try to be very, I would say, opportunistic in the bad sense of the word, you know, that they would do something to expect a return in relation to a certain person at a certain time versus looking at it holistically and thinking, okay, this is the kind of person that I am. This is how I treat people. I believe in good karma. And I don't know where opportunity is going to come for me, you know, if it's to keep in touch with a previous landlord or an ex-girlfriend, you know, maybe you can help them to get a job or land something. So I always try to keep an open mind when I think about doing things in a certain way. That way is the way that would add value. There's a saying, if you give everybody what they want, you're going to have what you want, something like that. So that's something I try to remind myself a lot.
Okay. Love that. Definitely, you know, I think that has absolutely worked in my favor since I moved, that I had an open... It's like I came with the language. I'm taking words of one of my guests. He said, I came with the language and an open mind. And that has absolutely worked in my favor. And to the point where I am today, it's all because of these two things. So I will just like shout it out again and just have an open mind. It will definitely help you grow in your career and even to survive in Canada, I would say. Yeah. So then I just want to go back to the point where I started my, introduction today. So I'll share a quick story with you. When I was preparing for my podcast and I was a heavy consumer of podcasts when I started preparing for it, you know, just kind of joining the dots together, you know, taking care of my concept and, you know, trying to understand what I really want to, topics I want to touch into. So I came across this one and I was really worried that, you know, how I'm going to compete with these people who have this millions of downloads, hundreds and thousands of downloads. And, you know, and that moment, it was in 2021, I came across this quote by, you know, Jay Shetty. And the quote was, I still have it written on my book, which I started preparing for. The quote was, I am where I am meant to be. This is my time. I'm not ahead or behind of time. And I literally wrote it on a post-it note and I posted it on my computer on my desk, you know. And that has helped me. That has given me that contentment to live in the moment and not worrying too much about the future. Because we do have this tendency of comparing ourselves, especially being immigrants, we compare ourselves to the people who share, you know, oh, we have got a first car or we have got our first house, but they have reached there, they have gone through a certain journey, and comparing yourself with them is not going to take you anywhere. You are exactly where you are supposed to be. And for example, let me just get back to the point where you shared this article, you know, on the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that you have to take care of your physiological needs before you jump into next steps. I want to talk a little bit about that as well.
Yes. I think that today, as you know, we live in a world that you get bombarded with information and with coaches that offer you solutions to problems you haven't even thought you have.
I love that.
And
yeah.
Especially during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Right? So I try to remind myself, you know, to prioritize. Right. I like that quote that you've given, you know, like, let's say, for example, when I was a student and I've noticed my teeth started moving and I went to an orthodontics clinic and I was checking for Invisalign, which is a form of treatment. And at the time, you know, I didn't have the medical insurance to cover it. So I waited for, once I got my first job, I had that, and then I used it, and I did it.
Yeah.
But if you were to go by the logic of a lot of the coaches, mentors, gurus nowadays, they would say, no, live the moment, do it immediately.
Yeah.
You know, get on that plane. And I'm thinking, you know, you can't always do that right away. If you can, good for you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you can't, don't beat yourself up about it. Like you said in the quote, that you're where you're meant to be at this particular moment in time. Even as I'm saying it to you, I'm reminding myself again.
Okay. I think we can talk more about it, but I think I'll cut it short here and I'll pivot to my last segment of the podcast. And I call it Beneath the Accent, because we are knowing each other beneath the accent. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions. You can answer them in one word or a sentence or however you feel like. The idea is just to know more about you. So ready?
Okay.
So let's just start with the classic question. So what advice would you give to Idan, who is in the initial months of landing in Canada?
Save as much as you can before, because how much you bring, as much as you bring, it will always not be enough, especially with inflation.
Okay. Is there something you recently bought and you now regret?
Something I recently bought and I now regret. I think I'm pretty calculated with what I buy. It's usually what I don't buy that I regret. And then I end up going back to the store and getting it.
Okay.
Sometimes you think, okay, I see it. If I'm still going to want it when I'm home, I'm going to get it.
Okay. So what is that one habit you adopted that has changed your life?
Listening to affirmations or audiobooks that goes into your subconscious mind and empowers you, you know, with certain beliefs that you would like to live. And because I'm a kind of a hyperactive person, I like to play a game on my phone while I'm listening to it, like Candy Crush or some kind of card game. And then I listen to it as I'm doing some activity, so I can keep busy, and it goes into my mind, and I feel that later on it's guiding my actions in a way.
I advise you to add this podcast to your roster as well.
Okay, sure. I should do that. Yeah.
Okay. If you could have to describe yourself as an animal, what would it be?
I think I would be a chameleon, because I feel that I'm very adaptable. I could change my color to blend in my surroundings. You know, if I go to a church, or if I go to a gay parade, then I would blend in the way that I would either dress or speak about certain things that I would understand that they're appropriate in that setting. And I think it's important to be able to put yourself in different contexts and blend in.
Amazing. Amazing answer. So name three things on your bucket list.
Three things on my bucket list. Well, one, I guess, would be to get fit, to lose weight and gain muscle. And I'm looking forward towards warmer weather for that.
Okay.
The next thing is to go to more concerts. I have a checklist of bands and artists that I like. And during the pandemic, I didn't really get a chance, especially when I lived in a smaller place. So now I'm gradually checking off that list, gradually going to those events and having those experiences that I would even consider sometimes spiritual to be in a setting of music that you like, and also getting merch from the band, which I see as a contribution to the artists. And I guess the third thing would be to get financially established. I feel that even though I finished school and I don't have to directly pay tuition, still having a student loan, you see, like, you're still in that circle. You still, you know, you want to finish that phase in life and then move to the next one. So I guess getting my health and fitness in order and going to more music concerts and getting more financially stable, those would be my three goals.
Okay. So who's your go-to person, Idan?
I don't think I have one. I think I would go to talk to different people at different times. Sometimes I talk to my sister, sometimes my parents, sometimes a particular friend, which he or she or they would be appropriate for that situation. So it really varies, I think.
Since you said you do listen to a lot of audiobooks as well, are there any that you would like to recommend to my listeners?
That's a hard question because there are so many people that you could listen to. I think one of the things, one of the speakers, it's more like speakers or like seminars, you know, or things like that. One of the speakers I really like is Abraham Hicks, who is a woman that calls herself, her name is Esther, but she says that she connects to like these non-physical beings. Okay. And it's a lot of talk about law of attraction and how to be aligned with what she calls source and then being in the flow to get what you want. Jim Rohn, who is very much into wealth and abundance mindset, and also Bob Proctor. And I'm just thinking if I have any examples from other fields. Well, I guess the next thing that I would check is your podcast, as you said.
Okay, good to know.
Yes.
So if you could have to eat, you know, one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
That's hard because there's so many tasty foods out there. Well, probably some kind of well-done beef, like a steak, like entrecote or, I don't know, one of those. But, and I really like well-done because I like to deny the fact that it was an animal. I just, it's like it's made somehow, some way, it's on my plate and I enjoy it.
Okay. Is there any dish or food item that you tried for the first time in Canada that you have never tried before? Like, for example, for me, it was avocado, you know, and hummus, both of these. I've never tried before in India. I tried for the first time here.
Yes. And were they good? Did you like them?
Oh, I love them. I absolutely love guacamole. Yes. I think it's like my go-to breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Guacamole.
So I think in Israel, luckily, we have a variety of food options, sometimes even tastier than Canada, and international foods, not just local. In Canada, particular food, I think people say that the national food is poutine right here. So I've tried a very particular one, which was Texan barbecue poutine.
Okay.
That it comes with pulled pork, and it had a barbecue flavor to it. So I really liked the way that particular restaurant did it. Because I'm not a fan of the other poutines. So,
okay. So, finally, describe Canada in one word or a sentence.
Opportunity if you work for it in an environment that's relatively peaceful.
On that note, Idan, thank you so much for being on the podcast and adding value to my listeners. Thank you.
Thank you, Guru Asis. It's been a pleasure, and I hope the listeners enjoyed it too.
Hey, listener, thank you for making it to the end. I highly, highly appreciate you listening to the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't as yet, and please share with your friends or anybody you think would like it. And like I always say, we encourage you to follow your heart, but also us on Instagram. The handle is mythickaccent. You can also leave us a review or write to us at hello@mythickaccent.com. So stay tuned and let's continue knowing each other beneath the accent.